This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Make It Plain, now on WPFW, and of course, glad to have you with us. We are going to have a very important conversation today. As many of you know, we have discussed to a great extent the 2024 election, a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, a lot of people wondering what really happened. Did we, or did Kamala Harris actually lose the election? That's what's really before us as we will attempt to have this conversation. Let me just also say, I want to thank WPFW for bringing me back to the place of my birth, my hometown, Washington, D.C. Great to be back here. And so we are very fortunate to have with us today a gentleman from who I've been watching some of the other broadcast he's been doing, but he's with Election Truth Alliance. Nathan Taylor joins us now. Nathan, welcome to Make It Plain, buddy. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very interested to hear what you've seen so far, what you've talked about so far, and then I'd really love to just have this conversation and then kind of show you what we're working on at the Election Truth Alliance.
Well, first of all, let me just say this. What I've seen is just really a lot of conversation, a lot of speculation. I've seen some of what you've talked about, particularly in North Carolina, but this will really be my first opportunity to examine or dissect or report to my audience on what you have found. And let's do this. First of all, tell us a little bit about Election Truth Alliance.
Yeah. So the Election Truth Alliance is a new organization that I helped form with two other co-founders, Lily and Jive, right after the election. So we have backgrounds. My background is in cybersecurity, Jive's in finance and statistics, and Lily's a political science expert. And so we got together after the election because we started to see concerns with how the results of our election went, some inconsistencies that we'll actually talk about here a little bit. We got together and we said, hey, let's actually start investigating this. And we put out kind of a call to action to others. We said, here's what we want to do. We want to do some analysis of our elections. We want to dive deeper. And then we had other experts with PhDs in statistics, data analysis, other cybersecurity, and other volunteers start to join us. And then we grew our organization. I think at this point, we're over 50 volunteers. And every day I work with some really amazing people. They want to remain somewhat anonymous, which puts me kind of on the front line. But that's generally what we do is we said, hey, we want to start digging into our elections. We want to make sure that our elections are being run freely and fairly. And we want to make sure all of these issues that we're going to talk about are being looked at, and we can feel more safe as we go forward. And this was at the beginning. This was right after the election. This was, I really sat down and had this conversation around 7 days after the election. And then it's been 6 months now where every day we have put out reports of analysis. As you said, we've done North Carolina. We've looked at Pennsylvania. We looked at Nevada. And we are continuing to grow the states we are looking at. I will highlight when we started this, it was very interesting, the things we started to uncover. And then now, as we'll talk about, we have some serious concerns. We can back it up with some serious data. And we will kind of talk about what does the next steps look like as we go forward.
What are some of the states pretty much that you have focused on?
Yeah. So we started out looking at Nevada. The reason why is because Nevada was a very interesting state. They were a very blue state, but in this case, during the election, it was won by the Republicans at the presidential level, but won by the Democrats all the way down ballot. And that raised some red flags. So we started digging there to first figure out, how can we look at elections? Can we apply statistics? Can we apply math to elections? Nevada was an interesting test because they give us really good voting data, like down to the actual individual ballot cast. And so that was the beginning of us starting to dive in and understand, how are our elections actually being run? So we looked at Nevada. And then from there, we put out a report on Nevada. We put out some press releases that kind of opened the floodgates to people starting to ask questions a bit more. Then we looked at Pennsylvania. And it has been, I feel like, a snowball effect since then. As you said, you've seen me talking about this wherever I can. So my background, I was a 25 Bravo computer tech specialist in the Army Reserves. Then I got my degree in network security and information systems, contracted and commissioned into the Army Guard, became a signal officer. So I've kind of focused a little bit in the background on the machines and on how our systems function and work. And we will talk a little bit about that as well, but we do have the statistical analysis to back up some serious red flags.
Well, look, Nathan, take it away. I want you to finish your class, and I'm going to pop in with some questions as they come up. But folks, this is very important. Tell a friend. Y'all want to watch. We're also streaming this throughout our social media. So folks, this is important. Let's take a listen.
Yep. What I'll do is I'll just kind of run through. I do have a PowerPoint little presentation for you. But we'll make it super conversational. Just, you know, I'll ask you questions. You ask me questions as they come up. So I will share this PowerPoint for you.
Okay. And I think we've also been joined by Joy Reid. We're kind of doing this on the fly. Joy, I didn't warn you that we were on camera today. You're welcome to join us on camera or not. Meet Nathan Taylor of the Election Truth Alliance. There she is. Hey, Joy.
Hello. I'm not camera ready, so.
You always camera ready.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Awesome. Well, I was just about, as I think you might be able to see it, I was throwing up a presentation. I am, sad to say, the presentation guy when it comes to looking at what we're going to talk about today. It's funny because I like to come with receipts. So I was very quickly going to say, we're going to show you a few things. We're going to talk about what the Election Truth Alliance has been up to. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has started to dig a little deeper into elections in the U.S., the 2024 election. Right. And so I will briefly show you what's going on. I like to start it off with, we're going to talk about what's actually going on right now. You might have heard about this. I think this is worthy news to talk about. And this is, there is a lawsuit in Rockland County, New York. It is filed by Smart Elections / Smart Legislation, and they are suing the county to attempt to get recounts in that county. Have you heard about this at all yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So this is really important, and I highlight this because what they are talking about is a few things. One, they have sworn affidavits from independent voters in multiple districts. There's at least two districts that they do talk about in their lawsuit, and that is District 39 and leave District 62, where there are, they have more sworn votes, or they have more voters who said that they voted for Diane Sayre, a independent candidate, than were ever recorded in those districts. That's interesting. The other half, what they talk about in their lawsuit, which is what we like to highlight, is they show across the county in New York, in Rockland County, they show that there is a noticeable down ballot difference. So at the presidential level, Harris is getting less votes across the county than the Democratic Senate candidate, which is Christine Gillibrand. And this is really important because they're highlighting, they have concerns, there's missing votes, and there's this down ballot anomaly. They call it drop off. So what's interesting, as we go forward, we have done similar analysis and more in-depth analysis across the swing states. And we are seeing the same anomalies, that down ballot difference, and we have been able to quantify it, and then we can actually show it to you. But what's even more interesting is, I'll go back now and I'll talk about, at the beginning, I said, hey, we had concerns. Why did I help form the Election Truth Alliance? Just a little caveat. So right after the election, I went to Washington, D.C. I went on a live stream with Jessica Denson, who does her kind of independent, she used to be with Midas Touch, I believe. I said that right?
Midas Touch. Yeah.
Yep. And so I think she has her own independent platform now. But I went on one of her live streams, and I kind of talked about this in the beginning when we didn't have as concrete analysis. But what was interesting then was, because of that, and because of the work I did before this, cybersecurity, information systems, I worked for some very, very secure clients that did, unfortunately, cost me my job at the time. So this is my job now. And as you'll see, I really enjoy doing this. I like talking about this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to highlight something, and you can stop me for questions right after. But Rockland County, New York uses the number one machine brand in the country for our voting systems. And I'm going to show you this map. So I'm going to highlight this. People talk about this a lot. They say, hey, our systems are decentralized. It's really difficult to potentially have changed the outcome of an election. It would require a lot of work. And here's the thing, as we're finding, as we're going deeper and we're looking at how are we actually running our elections, 70% of the U.S. uses two major voting systems. We're talking scanners. We're talking polling systems. 70% of the U.S. And what's important is the swing states specifically, Pennsylvania, for example, that number one brand, North Carolina, that number one brand. We're seeing this in other places as well. And what is frustrating now, as we're diving deeper, is there seems to be some concerns about these brands, these machines, these companies. For example, in 2024, on November 13th, Free Speech for People, they released a letter co-authored by a bunch of cybersecurity experts that talked about concerns of potential compromises of these major systems. They talked about how the voting systems and their images could have been compromised during lawsuits. They talk about how if bad faith actors wanted to change the outcome of elections, they would target these
recording systems. Stopped.
So, questions here.
Few places. And Joy, of course, you feel free to jump in as well. Joy Reid, honored to have her with us, folks. Let's go show you, we don't stop what we need to do no matter what other folks are doing. We still have to have these conversations. Tell us again how many people voted for the Senate candidate, Kirsten Gillibrand, and yet left the presidential ballot blank. And then
No, you're fine. I think I don't have hard numbers right now for the entire county, but I do know that there are multiple precincts across the county. This has been highlighted as well. This has come up, is there are multiple Ramapo precincts where there are zero votes at the presidential level for Kamala Harris. And then Kirsten Gillibrand is winning absolutely by like 300 to 400 votes down ballot. And we're seeing this across multiple precincts. I will highlight, this has kind of come up because there are people talking about Hasidic communities in the area and block voting. But I do think what is important here is we did our own independent analysis of Rockland County. We looked at that down ballot concern, and we're still seeing consistently across the county as a whole that Harris is, I wouldn't say missing votes, but consistently getting less votes than the senator and other down ballot races as well. And this is a red flag, and I'll actually talk about why it's a red flag when we look at these other states.
Can I just ask you a question just on that? Because there is a question of whether there were protest votes, essentially people refusing to vote for the top of the ticket because they were on one side or the other of the Gaza question, meaning if they were pro-Palestinian, they refused to pull the lever for Harris, but they might have still voted for other Democrats like Kirsten Gillibrand. Or, as to your point, if they were very, very pro-Israel and didn't believe Kamala Harris was pro-Israel enough, that they voted for the down-ballot Democrats but left her off. So that there are these two potential sources of drop-off that are more about protest than about the machines. Did you account for that when you looked at Rockland County?
Yes. So this has probably been the most common thing that has come up as a counterpoint, which is, it's good counterpoint. We've looked at that a lot. What is very interesting, as we'll kind of dive deeper, is we asked that question ourselves. We said, if Harris is an unpopular candidate, how is she comparing? And then we look at the actual statistical way that the votes are being distributed. Mm-hmm. And we'll highlight that we did pull some numbers. we did see that compared to 2020, where the amount of votes that President Biden got across the swing states, we saw in, I believe, four swing states, Harris got more votes this time around than Biden got in 2020. But she still lost those swing states. And that's very interesting when you look at it from a perspective of, if she's an unpopular candidate, she still got more votes than Biden in 2020. And then we dove deeper into saying, even if she's an unpopular candidate, what is the likeliness that she's going to consistently get less votes across multiple precincts, multiple counties, and multiple states? And is it just the swing states? So we ask these questions. And then I guess I'll show you kind of what we're looking at. So as we talked about before with Rockland County, what's important is we are seeing that drop-off anomaly. We're seeing this, and we're going to show it to you in these other swing states as well. And you asked for some hard numbers. Well, we did pull some hard numbers for North Carolina just to show that, for example, in North Carolina, Harris received 1,122,000 fewer votes than the superintendent race. And then while Trump received 191,000 more votes. And I will show you what that actually looks like. But we're seeing this in Pennsylvania. We're seeing this in North Carolina. We're seeing this in other swing states such as Arizona. We're even seeing this in Texas, which is interesting as we go forward. And so I will show you a little bit of North Carolina. I will highlight North Carolina, as we spoke about before, uses this number one machine brand, which we'll talk a little bit about the machines when you want to talk about that. But let's talk statistics. So I'm going to start you off with this. This is a baseline. I like to show this because this very quickly shows you what is normal look like. So this is 2016. This was Trump versus Hillary Clinton, 2016. And this is North Carolina. And the way you read these graphs is this is a down ballot difference or a drop off comparison graph. And so at the bottom, you have every county in North Carolina. And then that's the x-axis. And then there is on the y-axis, which is the left side, you have a comparison of how many votes did the president get compared to the superintendent in this case. And so 0% for both candidates is the amount of votes the superintendent got. If you are above 0% on this graph, you got more votes. If you are below 0%, you got less votes. Okay. And then in each county, there is two bars. There is a blue bar for the Democrats, and then there is a red/orange bar for the Republicans. So now that I've explained this, explain to me, what are we seeing? Are we seeing any trends or patterns across the entire state here? What is both parties generally doing?
Yeah, it seems that in every case, Donald Trump is overperforming the superintendent. And in a bunch of cases, Kamala Harris is underperforming the superintendent.
So in this case, this is Hillary Clinton, by the way. This is 2016.
It's 2016.
No worries.
Sorry.
And what is important here is we looked at what is the normal expected amount that a president would get. You know, how popular are presidents? They normally get 1% to 2% more votes than down ballot races. So, for example, in non-swing states, on average, we're seeing that 1% to 2%. In past elections, like 2016, we're seeing that 1% to 2% for the president, which is normal. So we actually argue this is more normal. Both candidates on average are getting around 1% to 2%. There is some negative, but it is very scattered. It is very chaotic. It is not super consistent. All right. So if this is what normal looks like, I'm going to show you 2024 for North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just let you look at this.
Oh, wow.
That is the same reaction I get every time. Everyone just says, what is going on? So for the viewers who can't see this, what we're seeing is before we had that 1% to 2% overperformance for both candidates, this time around, we're seeing across every county in North Carolina, Harris is getting less votes than the superintendent, and Trump is always overperforming. And what's interesting is there is almost a mirroring effect on this graph. That means that generally speaking, in places where Harris is getting less votes, Trump is getting a overperformance that somewhat mirrors that number of votes. This is a red flag. And we see this, and there could be some reasonable causes for this, but go ahead.
Because I want to understand this. I'm going to understand. We're talking about a presidential vote versus a superintendent, and the superintendent is what?
The superintendent of what?
The superintendent is getting more votes than the presidential race.
I mean, what is that role? What is that? I don't even know what elected office is.
I believe in this case, is it Senator or Superintendent Morris Green? I don't know. I have the numbers here. I'll pull it up for you.
Superintendent of elections. I mean, what is he superintendent of?
Let's see. North Carolina. So this is the superintendent. Let me double check which data set we pulled for this one.
Because I got to know how that happened. Who this?
This should be the superintendent of public instruction.
Superintendent of schools, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, with schools.
And what's interesting.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I got
we
you.
Did this same analysis for the governor's race, but we decided let's use a lower down ballot race. Why? Because there are some people bring up concerns about the governor's race in North Carolina. But we're seeing this effect in the governor's race. We're seeing this effect in the superintendent race. We're seeing this effect pretty consistently down ballot where other Democratic races raise the same flags that they are in some way performing and getting more votes than the presidential race.
So y'all, what Nathan is saying is we're looking at North Carolina right now, the superintendent of schools in the state of North Carolina consistently outperformed Kamala Harris. I just want folks to think about that for a minute. Okay, go ahead, Nathan. I'm sorry.
Yep. And I think this is Mo Green for this race.
Got
Mo Green is getting more votes than Harris was during the... Okay. So let's ask this question. And this is as we kind of dive deeper and we look at other states and we actually look at the hard data. What could cause this? Well, as we said, this generally can't be caused by normal human voting behavior. Unless a candidate is super unpopular, this may happen. The problem is, as we'll show you in these other places, this is so consistent that this raises red flags because normal human voting behavior, if it looks more like 2016, this is the polar opposite. And what's important is we're going to ask this question, what could cause this? If this isn't normal, if voters aren't doing this, what could cause this? And this is where the Election Truth Alliance has started to put out reports and document these findings. And we've worked with other election integrity experts, as we'll highlight, like Dr. Walter Mebbin, who is he works at the University of Michigan. He is one of the best election integrity experts who's actually made a way to analyze elections. And we are highlighting concerns that if there is a way to have compromised the voting systems and to change votes or delete votes for a candidate, this would create this effect. If you were taking votes from one candidate at the presidential race and giving them to the other, it could create that mirroring effect we're seeing here. Or if you're just deleting votes as well, it will create that drop off, that down ballot difference. So we dug deeper into that claim. If that is the case, what are some other ways we could actually figure this out? Well, I'm going to show you a few other states and then we'll go into the actual statistics for you, the hard numbers. So here is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a very important swing state. What we did is we broke it out here. On the left is mail-in voting and on the right is election day. We've started to analyze, are there any anomalies that show up in only one voting type? What could cause that? So we're seeing on the left, mail-in for Pennsylvania. This is all of the counties in Pennsylvania. This is the presidential race versus the Senate race. And what's interesting is we're seeing a somewhat more normal pattern for the mail-in voting. This is 2024. It looks more normal. Looks more like 2016. Looks more like what we would expect, generally speaking. Right. What's interesting is when we look at election day, that is where we're seeing that significant drop off, that significant down ballot difference, which is really interesting. Why would election day have this effect? As we talked about before, if this is caused by changing votes, deleting votes, switching votes, whatever, why is it targeted and centralized around election day for Pennsylvania? And I will highlight, if you do a little bit of digging, there were some concerning quotes that came up on the pre-inauguration rally talking about certain people knowing those vote counting computers. And we won Pennsylvania like in a landslide. There is a direct quote there.
Well, so, and also Donald Trump essentially barred his voters from voting any other day but Election Day. And he really heavily encouraged his voters to focus on Election Day. And also he's tried to say that the only legal votes should be on Election Day. So there was a big push to get people to vote on Election Day. And if you go back and you listen, you watch the way that day played out, you know, as, you know, has become the sort of custom, the Democrats did much better in mail-in ballots and lost Election Day.
Yeah, what's interesting, we looked at 2020.
Harrison, I should say.
So you bring up an excellent point. We looked at 2020, and I think people have forgotten this, but there were some concerning quotes in 2020 where a certain candidate at the time was talking about how mail-in voting is inherently fraudulent. Yeah. It is used to mess with elections. And I thought that was very interesting because we haven't really publicized a lot of our 2020 analysis, but we are seeing that a majority of voting in 2020 was mail-in voting. We think it's likely attributed to COVID. Right. I think Pennsylvania alone, 70% of the Biden vote was mail-in at the time. So it's very interesting as we dive deeper, mail-in almost always looks more statistically normal. The trends look more human in nature. Hmm. So I'll show you a few other states, and then I'll show you a little bit of those mail-in graphs and data that we talked about. So here's Arizona. We've not published Arizona yet. This is kind of a sneak peek into it. We're seeing the same thing. 2016 looks more normal. Both candidates, 1% to 2%. And then 2024.
Wow.
This is the Senate.
This is
president.
Yes, sorry.
President and Senate. So this is a drop off from the Senate. This is in comparison between
the president and the Senate candidates.
Yep. So similar to what we did with Pennsylvania, we're looking at how does the presidential race compare to the down ballot Senate race? And we're seeing in 2016 that more normal trend, both candidates 1% to 2%. And then in 2024, we are seeing across every county in the state that same underperformance for Harris. She's getting less votes than the Senate candidate across the entire state. What's interesting is I think one of the larger counties is Maricopa County. I mean, it's interesting because we did pull out some additional data. We looked at Maricopa County, we looked at Pima County, and we are seeing some other concerns that mirrors the concerns we're seeing in Pennsylvania and North Carolina as we talk about like precinct level voting data. So any questions on this one? Then I'll show you. I think I have one more for you.
Wow.
And then or maybe two more. But in this case, this is Wisconsin. We haven't published a lot in Wisconsin. They do seem to be a bit more normal. There's some variance. It's not every county here. But what is interesting is we are still seeing that significant underperformance pretty consistently. And we have kind of started digging into these other swing states, such as Wisconsin, such as Michigan. But this brings up concerns then. I think that was our last one. So now we're going to talk a little bit. I'll give you guys a few moments if you want any questions or anything. But so we're ready, I think, to get into the actual like statistical analysis and then the last little bit of visuals I'll show you.
So just to kind of encapsulate this, folks, for those of you joining us, Make It Plain live on WPFW FM 89.3 Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. and all across the country. Joy Reid, my very special guest co-host with us, because this is something we've been talking about offline. Saw Nathan Taylor on Mark Thompson. Who does the show? The Mark Thompson Show.
I was a little confused.
Why is he inviting me back on the same show, right? But this is two Mark Thompsons. We've never met, by the way. Mark Thompson also was in charge of CNN, so it's a lot of Mark Thompsons out here. We are finding the drop off. Now, let me just say something here. Joy, you recall 2008, 2012, what were Democrats accused of and pretty much known for? Voting top of the ticket and not voting down ballot. That's why we lost a lot of local legislatures during both Obama elections.
Yeah.
Somehow, all of a sudden, we're supposed to believe just organically in November 2024, Democrats said, and without any announcement or organization, just organically decided, hey, we're going to vote down ballot and not top of the ticket. We're just going to do that this time. That's what we're seeing, and that is what's raising the questions. Nathan Taylor of the Election Truth Alliance, and those of you who've got calls, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893 on WPFW. Go right ahead, Nathan.
Yeah, I think now's a good time to talk about some of the major things that come up in the concerns. So I think as we talked about, we said, what could like naturally cause this? If Harris was really unpopular, could it cause the effects? So now we're moving away from the down ballot analysis, and we're actually going to show you some hard statistics. And these statistics are based off the work of election experts in European elections that have highlighted their concerns. So for example, were you referencing the work of Peter Klimek et al? This is a group of physicists and researchers in election forensics. So they have papers on Russian elections, on more normal elections like Switzerland. They also look at Uganda. And we highlight this because we're not making up this science. We're not making up the math. We're basing our work on techniques already tried and tested that are being used in Europe already. And some of the other type of work we do, we base our work off the work of Roman Udod and Sergei Shvilkin. They are also notable election integrity experts, and they do forensics. So I love these heat maps. They're very simple, and I will show you why. So what we're doing is we're going to take heat maps, and we're going to compare them to counties in the United States. We're going to look at Pennsylvania. We're going to look at North Carolina. And they do let us somewhat quantify if there's manipulation. There are some red flags. There are some anomalies, and we'll show you what it looks like. So first, I'm going to kind of explain what are we expecting to see. Let me go back. Well, this is fine. So on the right, we have an actual snippet from Peter Klimek's paper. And so he's visualized us a few elections he's looked at. He's looked at Russia in 2011, 2012. He's looked at Uganda, and he's looked at Switzerland. And so what's interesting is Russia is somewhat well-known now for potentially having manipulated elections. They have a lot of concerns where there could be ballot stuffing in Russia. There could be like coercion to go to the polls or not go to the polls, things like that. And so because of that, we see in Russia a consistent trend where when you read these graphs, the way it is each little graph is a voter turnout. So from 0 to 100%, that means if you got 100 people who could vote in a precinct, and this is precinct level data we'll look at. If there's 100 people who could show up at a precinct, how many people showed up? 50%, 50 voters. And so what's interesting in Russian elections is you see that they have two major anomalies. One, they see that in precincts where more people showed up to vote, it almost always benefits the Putin or pro-Putin party, which is a symptom of ballot stuffing, where if turnout rises and one candidate starts to get more votes as turnout rises, that's a red flag. The other is they see a lot of turnout here. If you can see the comet trail up into the right, there's precincts with 100% turnout. In Russia, that's a huge red flag. That means you actually overstuffed or you stuffed the too many votes. So now that we've kind of talked about that, we're going to show you some of our counties and our elections. And I will highlight, this is one technique we'll show you, and then we'll talk about the other statistical technique that Dr. Walter Mebane has created. But what's interesting is I heard this put in the words before that I really didn't think about. All of this work has been based around European elections or African elections. It was never intended or never thought to apply it to the U.S. So we are doing, in my opinion, things that really haven't been done before. No one has really sat down and applied these techniques to the U.S. before. And this is the first time it's kind of being done. And we can do it to every election that we have this level of data for. And we have some data for 2016 as well. But in this case, we're going to focus on 2024. We're going to show you a few things. So I like to show this to you as a baseline. This is Ohio's District 5 State Board. This is a nonpartisan race. So this isn't a Democrat versus a Republican. These are nonpartisan candidates. We see in this case, there is no noticeable shifting or trend as turnout has increased across these precincts. We see from, it looks normal. It's more circular. And that's what we should expect to see. If a modeled fair and free election is more of a circle and there's no stretching or trends, the state race, the state board race in Ohio District 5 looks normal. Any questions here?
No.
All right. We're gonna go to Pennsylvania now. So this is Erie County. We put out a report for Erie County. We said there's three counties we wanted to look at in the beginning. That was Erie, that was Allegheny, and that was Philadelphia. And so we see more of a normal pattern here as well. This is Erie, but this is mail-in, I believe. And that's what's important. This is mail-in voting. So we're seeing a more circular pattern. We're not really seeing any one candidate winning as more people showed up to vote or more votes were cast. This looks normal. And then I'll highlight in these cases, this is almost always Trump's portion of the votes because he was the winning candidate in a lot of these places. And we like to use his as a representation. I will highlight like Harris is just going to be the inverse and the opposite. So you'll still see the effect. It'll just not show benefit. Okay, here we go. I'm going to show you Erie County, but I'm going to show you Election Day. And remember what we talked about. Pennsylvania, mail-in looks really normal trend-wise for the down ballot analysis, but Election Day looks really strange. So now we're going to show it to you with a heat map. And this is precinct level voting data that the county gave us, the state gave us. So this is actual voting data we pulled from the state.
Whoa.
I'm just going to let you look at this.
Wow.
All right. What are we seeing? Explain
Russia.
To me.
It looks like Russia.
It looks worse Canada. Than Russia. Russia is a comet trail. And yeah. Here's what's important is Russia has a large amount of precincts centered around a certain amount. And then there's a up and to the right comet trail. What are we seeing here? Where? Okay. So what we're seeing here is instead of a comet trail, we almost have what I would describe as a rocket. You're seeing a majority of precincts are shifting up and to the right. And as I said, a symptom of potential vote stuffing would be you are stuffing votes, which causes turnout to rise in precincts. And if you're stuffing votes that just benefit one candidate, it's going to create this type of effect. Questions?
And so explain, for those who don't know, including me, when we say vote stuffing,
yeah,
what do we mean? How does that...
Okay. So vote stuffing means you create fake votes, or you vote for voters who didn't vote, and you stuff those votes in, and you stuff them for one candidate. And so, for example, in Russia or Uganda, they have, or a lot of their evidence points to physically going and taking paper ballots and stuffing votes, meaning I went and I voted for X amount of people, or I just had a stack of ballots. And that's a common thing that's concerned or raised concerns in Russia. We don't really have that concern in the U.S. elections. We don't think people are going around in these swing states with stacks of ballots. What we are concerned about, a digital ballot stuffing, a potential compromise of the tabulation machines, which counts the votes. And if you were to compromise the tabulators, the vote counting computers, as some people have said, you could theoretically vote for voters who didn't show up, creating the turnout, causing it to rise, or you could vote for voters that don't actually exist. And that's our concerns. That's what we're diving into. We're looking at the machines. We're looking at how could you actually pull this off? That would be the only way to potentially do this so uniformly across multiple states and multiple counties and multiple precincts in this case. It's very consistent. Did that help?
And it's interesting that that is literally what MAGA people believe that blue cities did for Joe Biden in 2020. They firmly believe that, but what they're claiming happened and the reason that those Georgia, those two, the mother and daughter in Georgia were attacked and had death threats and had to leave their home is that Rudy Giuliani claimed that they had a hard drive where they were doing exactly what you're saying. So it is ironic to me that, you know, MAGA people believe that Joe Biden, and they look to the thing they used to try to prove that 2020 was stolen was the huge turnout, right? This was the largest turnout in the history of an election. It was a monumental, huge win for Joe Biden. And they're claiming that because Joe Biden was not that popular, there's no way that he got that many votes. And that in blue, black-run cities or brown-run cities in the West, they were ballot stuffing. What's kind of ironic about that is, as you said, 2020 was an overwhelmingly mail-in election. So there wouldn't be a way to, right? And so I find it all very fascinating that, you know, the same claim that's been made about Biden in 2020 is essentially what you're saying here, but you're saying that on election day, something anomalous happened that didn't happen in mail-in. Is that a fair way to summarize it?
And what's really interesting, as you said before, is as we'll talk about next, is Dr. Walter Mebane's work. He did analyze the 2020 election. He looked at the winning candidate at the time, which was President Biden, and he put out a paper about it. And we'll talk a little bit about it, but he didn't find any statistical or any significant evidence of election fraud benefiting the winning candidate, which was Biden. So that's very interesting, as we said.
And also an example of projection. You know, people project what they are capable of doing themselves. Well, you all are doing this. And then Democrats do the opposite and overemphasize peaceful transfer of power and declare before the fact they will never question the outcome of an election like we are. They would not. And folks, we're doing this outside the box because we're not really supposed to be doing this according to the Democratic Party establishment, no matter what. Because they were so gaslighted about 2020, the Democratic establishment says, well, we can't now raise any of these questions because we were so gaslighted and projected upon in 2020. Nathan, before we go, we've got about 20 minutes left. Joy Ann Reed is with us, folks. Folks, check out the Joy Reed Show on the Joy Reed channel, by the way. Glad to have her here with us. Nathan Taylor of Election Truth Alliance.org. Let's do this. We got a couple of quick callers on the line. I want to get these callers in, and Nathan will come in and let you conclude. Caller number one, you're on the air. What's your name?
I'm Terry Goldsby. I'm a super voter in Prince George's County. And the Sunday before the Tuesday election in 2024, I was at school on a website doing homework, and a pop-up came up. And the pop-up said, did you know that there's an election on Tuesday? If you want to cast your vote, click here. And I had already put my ballot in the drop box in the county. And I'm very aware of when early voting like stopped the Thursday before the election, and that was totally inappropriate. And it has been sticking in my craw since then. I'm really glad you all are having this program, because it's an unimaginable interference. Right. And just like you said, as a Democrat, we're not supposed to be projecting that it was stolen, but that was an extremely creative way of stealing it.
Yeah. Thank you for your call. Well, we've heard some of those stories as well. Let me get this other quick call in. Mike, who's the next caller? God bless you. You're on the air. What's your name?
Richard. Good morning.
Hey, Richard, real quick for me, buddy. Please.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The point that Nathan made about the computer manipulation, Donald Trump as much confessed that out of his own mouth during his victory lap as he applauded those who were helpful in his getting his victory in those swing states. And he stated Elon Musk. He said that Mr. Musk did a remarkable thing with his computers. So you're on the right path. I mean, it's just a matter of will it be able to get busted, exposed. And then Elon Musk notified the election officials that Trump had won the election, and then his Starlink satellites blew up. So there is some, association in there with that. But Trump, out of his own mouth, sir, confessed that there was Elon Musk computer manipulation that guaranteed his victory. Thank you for your work, sir.
He didn't say that outright. I think what he said
wait a minute. Listen to what he said. He said, I want to thank Elon Musk. He's remarkable with computers, and he aided in the victory. What else? What could it be but that? But manipulation, because Elon Musk is not voting. Okay, good. I'm sorry. Correct.
No, you're right. But what I just want to be precise with the quote. He also said before the election, days before, I don't really need any votes. I've already got the votes. So he was saying those types of things. And all along, he's been talking about what votes he didn't need. They had no ground game either.
Really not.
There was no ground get out the vote effort on the Republican side. Win an election without that. Thank you, Richard, for your call.
And by the way, if I could just say, and I want to ask Nathan this question, because this came up, I'm an OG. So I was working in news and in 2000 in that election and all the questions regarding that election. And there were a lot of people on the pro-Gore side who were trying to raise these questions about the machines. And people really kind of got run out of the media for even raising questions about the machines, only for Trump's campaign and his supporters to raise the same questions. And Fox wind up in a big lawsuit with two, Smartmatic and the other big company, regarding questioning whether the machines were manipulated. So I think there's a core distrust of the machines on both sides of the aisle. Like, I don't like both sides, but I think this is one of those things that a lot of people share, depending on how the election goes. People don't really trust the machines. The question I've always had, and back then, Nathan, when we were when I was at WTVJ, I was working as a digital journalist, but I was just on the online, I was an online editor, but I still reached out to the company that was one of these sort of election, and one of these sort of something like you, an election integrity. And they said that the reason that they could not have stolen the election digitally in 2000 is that the machines were not networked together, that you'd have to hack each individual machine in order to flip an election. And that is how it was explained to me why that election was not stolen by the machines. Is there some, we've progressed 24 years, 20 years in terms of technology, obviously. Is there something that someone could do if you had a Starlink or some other sort of technology to attack, thousands or tens of thousands of machines at once?
Yes. So this is one of the concerns we raise. Remember in the beginning when we talked about, I'll go back to it just because we talked about there are two major brands that span a majority of the U.S. And as you said, the number one thing, so we actually reached out to the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania. And just recently, they denied a meeting with us. They denied their staff didn't want to meet with us. We sent them a bunch of data. And we'll talk just at the end about that last little bit of data. But we found the number one brand in the U.S. may have cellular modems in their tabulation machines. And that would be ES&S. That would be their DS200 type models. They have cellular modems that connect to, I think, the Verizon network. It might be a private cellular network. But the point I think we bring up now is, although your voting machines, there's a lot of voting machines you vote on, ballot marking devices, those aren't generally connected to the internet. But the machines that count your votes, the machines that add up your votes, scan them, and then send a report off, those may be connected through cellular. And people will say, you know, I asked this question, is your cell phone connected to the internet? Cellular is the internet now. It may not have been back in the day, it is now. And so, yes, one of the largest brand that we're seeing is used in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Rockland County. They may have cellular modems in them. The other half of the pie, then, is the machines that aren't directly connected to the internet during voting. The tabulators may not be connected during, and then they, you know, will take USB drives and transfer the votes. The problem is, with my cybersecurity background as well, you don't need real-time connection to have compromised the system. There are examples of this happening with the first known like self-propagating malware, which was Stuxnet. It infiltrated a nuclear facility that was air-gapped, had no internet at all, but they likely transferred it using like a media device. So we have the same concerns. If you were to compromise the hard drives that go into these machines, if you were to compromise anything at a higher level, when they get distributed, you could put malware on these systems. It would be hard. It would require some planning, some effort, likely some coordination with a few people, but it's not impossible. And to be honest, I feel like this is probably the, if you were going to compromise a system, I talked about this before, a lot of our systems are proprietary and they are like, they are secret and then they're a black box and you don't talk about them and they're obscure. The problem is if you want to compromise these systems, you're going to put yourself in a position where you can learn about these systems, figure out how they work. And then it's not as hard as people think to then come up with a way to potentially impact them. So I think I will kind of wrap up here with the last thing, big okay. picture. And that is, I think as I talked about before with Dr. Walter Mebane, we asked Dr. Walter Mebane, he is a professor of political science and statistics at the University of Michigan. He's worked with USAID. They gave him a grant, him and a few other experts, and they co-authored and created models that do election forensics and can statistically detect election fraud or at least indicate where it's occurring. He's authored over 11 papers looking at elections around the world, Bolivia, Iran, and 2020 in the U.S. And then we asked him to apply his model and his work to Pennsylvania and North Carolina at the precinct level. Look at the precinct data for every county in the states and tell us, are you detecting any indications of fraud? And what are your estimated numbers? And so here's his report. He's given us two working papers. One of them is on his website right now. That's Pennsylvania. The other hasn't been put up yet. We've talked about it. We talked about the numbers. And that's North Carolina. So here we go. And so for Pennsylvania, his method detected approximately up to 225,000 anomalous votes. This is per his work and per his paper. This would exceed the margin of victory in Pennsylvania. So Trump was winning by 120,000 or so votes. If this higher end, if 225,000 of these votes are anomalous, meaning they show indication that they could be stuffed votes or switched votes or even impacted deleted votes per Dr. Walter Mebane's work. And the way you do it is you look at every precinct in the county. There should be no correlation between higher turnout and one candidate winning. And then it flags when that trend is occurring and then it estimates how much of that could be caused by anomalous voting. So his higher end is 225,000. That would be enough to change the outcome of the presidential race in Pennsylvania. And we don't stop there. We asked him to look at North Carolina as well. And so he gave us two numbers, generally speaking, and his paper is up on his website. It's up on our website, electiontruthalliance.org. For Pennsylvania, North Carolina will be coming out soon. We'll be putting this out in a report probably by the end of next week is really what we're aiming for. But same concerns, 207,000 possibly fraudulent, highly anomalous votes. And he gives us a little more hard number. And he says at least 102,000 of those are high confidence that they could be manipulation. And so the margin of victory in North Carolina is around 184,000. So we kind of did our own analysis. We're trying to recreate what he's doing. And we are finding similar concerns, right? If his high end is right, around 206,000 or so, that would be enough to change the outcome of North Carolina as well. We're estimating around 197,000 with our methods. Questions?
Wow.
And this is just the swing states we've analyzed so far. We did start digging into other swing states. So Arizona, we're already seeing up to, or at least in this case, this is based off the drop-off, not based off precinct data. This is at least 118,000 or so anomalous votes in Arizona and around 20,000 or so in Wisconsin. I will highlight Wisconsin, probably another 10 or 20,000 would be enough to change the outcome there. And then Arizona, we're still diving a little deeper. So I'll let you guys think on that.
Wow. Just a few more minutes left. Mike, we got one more call. I want to get to the call. I want to be respectful. Yeah. Call, are you there? Go right ahead. God bless you. What's your name?
Gary Crane.
Gary, real quick for me, Gary. God bless you.
Yeah. So assuming you create a great movement and you get millions of people joining you and everything, what's your roadmap? What do you see would be a realistic success? And does it include passing legislation so we can join the rest of most of the democracies in the world and have paper ballots? And is there
excellent question? Is he able to hear me?
Yeah.
So we currently, the Election Truth Alliance and a bunch of other organizations, just like what Smart Elections is doing in New York, we are looking at moving forward with legislation and lawsuits. We've already spoken to a lot of different state governments. I think lawsuits will come first. Is we're looking at, hey, let's actually go into court. Let's dive deeper into what's going on. Let's investigate how could this have happened and try and get recounts or actually look at the physical ballots because that's the proof. The proof is in the paper. We pull out those ballots. We check, hey, did the voters vote for this? You're looking at, like, to be honest, class action lawsuits against any compromised systems, depending on how they were compromised through negligence or through malicious action. And then, yeah, we're looking at moving and working with the states to pass legislation, whether we go back to paper ballots, whether we find a better way to run our elections systems-wise. And then, you know, look at, hey, if these races were impacted, was it the presidential race? Was there down ballot races that were impacted? And how does that impact our current administration as we go forward? The midterms are around the corner. The next election isn't that far away either.
Right.
And that's our big push right now is we're like, hey, if these machines are compromised, we need to figure this out before the midterms. That's why we're here.
Joy, any final question from you?
I mean, my final question is, Nathan, you know, because I and Mark knows that I've said this, you know, whenever I'm on a show and people say, well, you know, we'll have an opportunity to fix this in the midterms in 2026, or they look forward to the 2028 election. I would say, well, that's assuming we have free and fair elections in the United States ever again. And I'm not sure that we will. And so I guess I'll ask that question of you, Nathan. Do you believe, knowing what you know, that we will have a free and fair election in 2026 or 2028?
30 seconds, Nathan.
My concern is with everything we know right now, I do have concerns that the midterms could be manipulated if the 24 election was manipulated. If these machines are used and we don't dive deeper and we don't look at the work Dr. Walter Mebane did and what we're highlighting, I do have concerns.
I invited Dr. Mebane. He said he's not doing media interactions right now. Nathan, I want to connect you and Joy, so she may want to do some follow-up on her show.
That would be awesome.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, Joy Reid.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining another edition of Make It Plain on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica Radio.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.